Argument of the day is United States against George. Mr. Green.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel. May it please the Court, I'm Kurt Green on behalf of Defendant Kevin Anthony Dorch. We're here on appeal today for the unjust 20-year statutory maximum sentence of Mr. Dorch for the robbery and subsequent flight of $9,100 at a grocery store bank in broad daylight while wearing a suit. And specifically, the district court erred in his sentencing in three specific ways. First, when it applied a four-level enhancement for causing serious bodily injury despite the government's uncorroborated, unreliable, and factually deficient hearsay testimony. Second, in impermissible double counting, when it applied a two-level enhancement for reckless endangerment during flight and a six-level enhancement for assaulting a police officer for what essentially was the same conduct. And then third, in applying a two-level enhancement for threat of death given the circumstances that surrounded the robbery. For those reasons, we ask that that the district court's sentencing be reversed for resentencing accordingly. The first issue we want to raise is that the district court erred in applying a four-level enhancement for causing serious bodily injury for the alleged injuries that occurred to Officer Huckabee for smoke inhalation and a brief hospital stay. And in fact, on the record, there's not sufficient evidence to establish any indicia of reliability on that testimony. While the court can consider hearsay in a sentencing testimony, there also has to be some indicia of reliability, and there has to be some testimony on the nature and the extent of the injury that occurred.
Was there any doubt that the officer went to the hospital?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, okay. She did establish that.
And I understand your attacks. You argue that there should have been more.
Right.
The defense presumably had the opportunity to present evidence on this issue as well, correct?
Sure.
If it thought the testifying officer's testimony was not reliable. But we don't have anything else other than he went to the hospital for at least a couple of days, and we don't know exactly what for, but smoke inhalation figures into it, right?
Right. That's correct.
Given that that's the only evidence on the question, what's wrong with relying on that, given our adversarial process in which the defense had an opportunity to bring forward conflicting evidence?
Well, a couple of issues. First, there is testimony that he did go to the hospital, but there's no other testimony as to what occurred in the hospital. And remember, this is in the backdrop of him receiving a level enhancement for serious bodily injury, right? And so the only evidence in the record is that he went to the hospital. That's it. And it even appears in that case that it was just for precautionary measures, that it was not for any specific medical treatment. And when you look at the definition of serious bodily injury and you take the issue of hospitalization as it relates in that definition, it is contemplating medical intervention, and even mentions things like surgery and physical rehabilitation and those kind of things.
Well, what hospitals cost these days.
Understood.
Isn't it fair to assume that somebody thought there was a pretty serious reason to have him in there?
Yeah, this is smoke inhalation, and this was precautionary measure overnight. We don't know.
Do we know that?
Well, that's based on what's in the testimony. Now, here's part of the problem. It is their burden to establish that there was an injury. It is the government's burden to establish that there was a serious injury and then take it to the next level of it being a serious bodily injury. Neither of those are present in this case. And, in fact, they could have done that in a myriad of ways. I mean, they could have used medical records. They could have called Officer Huckabee. They could have offered a corroborating witness who could have explained more about the injury. But, unfortunately, in this case, on cross-examination, the sole officer that they put up on this point couldn't answer basic questions about the nature and extent of the injury. The only thing she could offer up is that he went to the hospital. We have no other information other than that. And that is simply not enough to establish, really, that there was a significant injury, let alone that it rises to the level of a serious bodily injury. So, in this case, without more, there is not enough in the record even to establish that there was a significant injury, let alone serious bodily injury. And even if you take her testimony as true, and even if hospitalization, even if there was an injury for smoke inhalation or any other injury that's presented in this record, it only rises to the level of bodily injury, not serious bodily injury. Serious bodily injury is contemplated by the rules and by courts interpreting it. It considers much more serious injuries than smoke inhalation, particularly when it is for precautionary measures in the hospital and no significant treatment, no ongoing pain, at least no testimony on that fact. And the government brings up the issue that one of the officers received some stitches, but again, even considering that, that does not rise to the level of serious bodily injury. And in fact, in the district court, the government argued that you didn't even need to go into that, that the court did not even need to consider that, that it only, once it found out that there was hospitalization, that the record was closed, and that is simply not the case. So in this case, there's not enough evidence in the record to establish any significant injury, and and if there is an injury, it only rises to the level of bodily injury, not serious bodily injury.
If the offense level under the guidelines, as calculated by the district court, was 38, correct?
Right.
If it's 36, what's the, if you can refresh my recollection,
yeah,
what does the guideline range become?
Certainly. What happened in this case was he received an enhancement from 20 to 38. That was then moved back to the statutory maximum of 240 months.
Well, what was his criminal history category?
A three, level three. And in this case, two-level reduction does not take him down to the 240-month maximum. There are three issues on appeal here that all have to be met that I think would significantly reduce his sentence in that regard. All right. Now, the second issue is that there was impermissible double counting when the court applied a six-level enhancement for assaulting a police officer and a two-level enhancement for reckless endangerment during flight when it was really based in the same conduct. The critical issue here is whether there was an underlying distinct change in the behavior of the defendant that would justify the double counting.
Were there two different cars?
There was two different cars, but what's at issue here was the same car and the same flight. Okay, so what they've said is he Mr. Dortch gets in a vehicle in his attempt to escape, hits this officer's vehicle, and continues his flight. And what happened here is the government tries to parse out that, well, there was these differences in the flight of the vehicle. When, however, if you do that, then you get into the issue of, you know, trying to parse this vehicle flight and could result in, you know, multiple levels of enhancement that really was not what the sentencing guidelines were intended to do. And in fact, when most cases that review this issue, there is something distinct and different about the flight that justifies the two level or the different levels of enhancement. For example, taking a hostage, pointing a gun at an officer, something to that effect. You don't see a court trying to parse out a single vehicular flight to attach different levels of sentencing to it. And that's the trouble in this case, that this is a single act, act by the plaintiff, by the defendant, that resulted in this double counting in this case. And one other point I want to make is on this threat of death.
So in your view, if the defendant gets in a car and flees at high speed, and he shoots the first officer who's attempting to follow him, and then he shoots the second officer and he kills them both, he can't receive an enhancement for two murders. He would only receive a two-level enhancement for flight.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Why is this any different? He flees, he crashes the first car, he carjacks another car, he flees in the second car, he crashes the second car, he starts a fire in the garage. I mean, this is a whole series of acts, each of which he could have desisted from doing, and you would think there would be marginal punishment for doing each additional dangerous act. But your argument seems to be there's no marginal punishment for all of these additional dangerous acts.
No, and let me be clear. No, I'm not saying that. Remember, here we have 18 levels of enhancement, and during his flight, there was an enhancement for carjacking. There were various enhancements throughout this flight. All we're saying is that in this specific issue, and that's why we didn't raise those on appeal, we're talking about this specific issue is as it relates to him hitting the police vehicle during the exact same part of the flight that was also reckless endangerment during the flight. So we're saying that in that instance, there cannot be double counting. All right. So there's 18 levels of enhancement altogether here. And then the last point.
The whole point of these other enhancements for the dangerous acts, including the carjacking, rest on the assumption that this is not just one flight, that there are a series of decisions, and each time the defendant had an opportunity to either desist or to endanger third parties, he chose to endanger third parties. And I don't understand why that principle can't be applied fully to each of the acts by which he endangered third parties, additional third parties.
Yeah, understand, Your Honor, is it okay if I answer that question?
As long as judges are asking questions, you can answer. I guess the
answer to that is this. Those were considered. Each act was considered. Each act received an enhancement where it was appropriate. This one particular instance received two because he was during the reckless or during the flight once he got into the second vehicle and hit the officer's car. That was accounted for in the six-level enhancement or the two-level enhancement. And the rules or the sentencing guideline commentary even speaks of this issue. When you have two Chapter 3-level enhancements for this same conduct, you should not double count those. And that's what happened in this case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Radcliffe.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Radcliffe. I obviously represent the United States government in this case. I did handle the case below on appeal as well. I'd like to address first the issue regarding the enhancements, the alleged double counting. Of course, our position is there was no double counting in this case, but I want to clear something up. Defense counsel has repeatedly suggested that the reason there is double counting is because the conduct for which the defendant was penalized, that six-level enhancement for endangering the officers by ramming them with the second vehicle, the carjacked vehicle, that happened during the time that he was in flight with that carjacked vehicle, and therefore he should not get a second enhancement of two levels for reckless endangerment while fleeing police officers. What that argument ignores, Your Honors, is that the defendant, during the time that he had his own car, the first vehicle that he used in this flight from police, also engaged in reckless endangerment by going on, as you saw in the brief, a high-speed chase at 40 to 50 miles per hour down residential streets that were posted at 25 miles per hour with four or five police cars chasing him. This is the immediate flight from the bank, which eventually ended at the end of that cul-de-sac when he crashed into that house, which was another way that he recklessly endangered lives while fleeing from police officers. So there were, as Chief Judge Eastbrook pointed out, multiple times during this flight, during his protracted battle with police, as I described it in the brief, that he could have stopped. And there were not only multiple phases to this flight, but different ways that he did it. Sometimes he was on foot, other times he was in a car, other times he was refusing to leave a burning building. There were multiple aspects to this flight, and for that reason, double counting is not at issue here. Turning back then to counsel's primary issue.
Let's come to the burning building. What is the evidence that the officer was injured at all? Right, there's a statement. There's certainly evidence that the officer went to the hospital. What's the evidence that he's injured?
Your Honor, the evidence that he was injured, the evidence is that he was injured and that he suffered smoke inhalation injuries. That is the specific testimony from Officer Fitcher, who is the injured officer that we're speaking of here, Officer Huckabee. Officer Fitcher is Officer Huckabee's colleague on the police department. She spoke with him directly about his injuries, and the court also saw a video of the burning building, of the burning garage, I should say, that the defendant was in and refusing to leave, and heard testimony that Officer Huckabee was one of those officers who was in the garage, and in fact that officers...
But none of this is approaching my question, which is, what's the evidence that he was injured?
What is the evidence?
People go into burning buildings and come out perfectly sound.
Well, Judge, in fact, there were two officers who suffered smoke inhalation in this case, and I think this is...
You say, in fact, they suffered smoke inhalation. I'm asking what the evidence was. I mean, you can say that as often as you like, but I'm trying to figure out what the evidence is.
Your Honor, I believe Officer Fitcher testified that Officer Huckabee was injured in this case. If you're looking for the direct link...
That what the briefs say is that her statement was that he was taken to the hospital for observation for smoke inhalation. right? That leaves the question, what's the evidence that he was injured? For all I know, the collective bargaining agreement between the police union and the city requires any officer who goes into a burning building to be taken to a hospital for observation. That was done, that the physicians at the hospital concluded there was no injury whatsoever, and that he was let out. Right? Is there any evidence that he was injured? It's a simple question, you would think.
Your Honor, I continue to think about that. I'll address one issue that you've raised just now, which is the collective bargaining agreement, if it existed in this case, does not require, based on what happened to the other officer who went into this garage who did suffer smoke inhalation injuries, does not require being taken to the hospital because another officer in this case did receive treatment at the scene by EMTs or paramedics for the smoke inhalation injuries that he suffered during the same incident as a result of the same burning garage that he and other officers went into looking for victims who might have been in the carjacked car. Your Honor,
it may be that this guy was seriously injured. It may be that if you put a physician on the stand or just got an affidavit from the emergency room physician, they would say he inhaled smoke, some of his alveoli were burned, his lung capacity was reduced by X percent, right? When you take somebody to a hospital for observation for smoke inhalation, you perform tests like that. It's really easy to show what they are and what the results were.
Your Honor, I think that the way that this observation or precautionary observation lingo has been inserted into this case is through the defendant's advocacy in his well-crafted brief. The officer Fitcher did not testify that her colleague was taken to the hospital for precautionary reasons. She testified that he was taken to the hospital for smoke inhalation injuries that he suffered and that he stayed there overnight and for 2 days. We don't know exactly what time he was released on the second day. We do know this robbery happened in the early to mid-afternoon on the day of the incident. Judge, certainly.
Reason why you wouldn't produce medical evidence to show that somebody was injured? This is just so weird, right? You want to show that somebody was seriously injured, so you produce a statement from another police officer whose medical knowledge is nil, which is, well, maddeningly vague would be the most favorable description of this statement. Right? It is the prosecutor's burden to show something by a preponderance of the evidence. If this were all the evidence there was in a tort suit where the plaintiff had to show something by a preponderance of the evidence, it would be dismissed on summary judgment.
Understood, Your Honor. But the baseline we were working with here was the commentary in the definition. I shouldn't say the commentary, but the definition in section.
It says that you can. It helps to tell whether an injury is serious by whether it required hospitalization. So if somebody has his finger cut, whether it's a serious cut, you know, you may tell whether somebody is hospitalized.
Your Honor.
It doesn't help you to determine whether somebody was injured in the first place.
Judge, I may be misunderstanding your question. Are you looking for evidence regarding the fact that the smoke inhalation or whatever caused Officer Huckabee to go to the hospital was actually something that was a direct result of being in that garage that day? Or are you looking for
whether it was injury?
People
inhale smoke all the time without being injured.
Correct, Judge. But the reason, and there are a couple responses I have, Chief Judge Easterbrook, to the questions you're asking. One is that, as I said, we were working with the definition, which is serious bodily injury means an injury requiring medical intervention, such as surgery, hospitalization.
Injury requiring, right? Was there evidence that this was an injury? Was there evidence that hospitalization was required? There isn't either kind of evidence in this record.
There is not evidence, Your Honor, that hospitalization was required. There is only evidence that the officer was correct, was admitted to the hospital and stayed overnight, whereas one of his other colleagues did not receive hospitalization as a result of the smoke inhalation injuries that he suffered, presumably to a lesser extent, during the same incident, Judge. And the reason, Your Honor, that we did not have I know the court hasn't asked this directly, but you certainly suggested we could have proven injury and the extent of it in different ways, and I certainly acknowledge that. The reason that we did not have testimony from Officer Huckabee is that he was unavailable on a vacation the day of this rescheduled sentencing hearing. And I recognize, Judge, that that is not, I can tell from your expression, that's not a good reason, Judge. But let me explain to you.
Get an affidavit from the physician. If you want to tell whether somebody is injured, the person to ask is not a police officer. It's a physician.
Well, the person who we asked, again, was the officer who directly spoke to this officer about his injuries. But, Judge,
Are you telling me that the next time this problem arises, you're going to litigate it the same way?
Absolutely not.
This is irresponsible behavior.
Absolutely not. I would litigate this very differently now, knowing what I know after reading the brief in this case from the defense, not even before I came here today. But, Judge, this sentencing hearing took three different sessions over several months to get a sentencing hearing done when we only had two witnesses. We had an FBI agent and the officer, Officer Fitcher, who testified in this case. We were trying to get the sentencing done in this case, given the court's very busy schedule back when this happened in the summer of, I believe it was last year, and we did not have Officer Huckabee there. I recognize that. But, Judge, we were working with the baseline belief that because serious bodily injury is defined as an injury requiring hospitalization, and that because in this day and age, given the medical costs that we all are aware of, that a trained, skilled physician would not admit someone to the hospital overnight unless they had an injury and unless hospitalization was required, that therefore showing those two things, we believed, was sufficient under our burden. And we also believe then that it is not clear error, it was not clear error for Judge Lozano to rely on that in concluding that there was serious bodily injury in this case. And I'd like to also respond to, in the reply brief, the defendant accuses the government of arguing that...
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Green? Well, thank you very much. And, Mr. Green, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under